Happy Mother's Day from Next Fan Up. We've got kind of a different edition. This one's split into two parts. We're going to start things off with Jay talking about the Madden curse, plus a little bit of help from James, our Texans superfan, to try and put things into context and apply some reality to that. After that, we'll kick into the normal show, though. We're going to be doing some draft grades. So for now, enjoy Pod Vader and James talking about the Madden curse.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That is the sound of my namesake Darth Vader screaming no at the end of Revenge of the Sith and learning Queen Padme's death. This is how I feel learning that Tom Brady is now on the cover of Madden 18. To join me in talking about this horribleness, James, our Texan superfan, is here.
So you're using the sound effect from when one franchise died to as a premonition for when possibly another franchise is going to die?
Oh my gosh. Wow, James. So you're saying that the Madden curse is going so far that it's going to kill off the video game series in its entirety?
No, I'm actually exact opposite of you. There is no Madden curse, Pod. Just like I wish there was no episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the Star Wars universe.
First of all, that's sacrilege about the Star Wars, but that's an entirely different conversation. There isn't, too, a Madden curse, as Fox Sports was so kind enough to give us a ranking of the worst cursed or the least cursed cover athletes to the most cursed cover athletes. I've counted them through. There are 7 athletes that are definitively cursed by being on the Madden cover. And then there are 4.5 that are sort of arguably cursed. 0.5 because Troy Polamalu and Larry Fitzgerald decided to share a cover, or EA Sports decided they were sharing a cover. And then there were 5 athletes that were not cursed at all. That's a lot of data that says there's a curse, James.
So says you. So, I mean, I didn't add those numbers up. Based on what I found online, I've got actually 20 cover athletes, although a couple of them were in the background. Started way back when in Madden 1999 with Garrison Hurst on the cover. He was technically in the background. And then, obviously, we've got Tom Brady this year. One athlete a year with the exception of 2000. It was Madden 2010. Which was released in 2009 based on 2008 season, which is always fun to try and figure out what exactly you're talking about with Madden games. But like you said, they had 2 athletes on the cover. But if you're saying 7 people are cursed, which we can get to that in a second, out of 20 athletes, so roughly a third of the athletes that appear on Madden covers go out and have a horrible season the following year.
That's right.
I'm kind of curious what the league average would be for a player going out and having a horrible season the following year. My guess is it's probably around 33%, which is what this curse is. And on top of that, to get on the Madden cover, you typically have to have an all-pro season. And the rate at which you're going to repeat an all-pro season is typically pretty low. So is this truly a curse, or is this people having an extraordinary season and then just going back to their normal selves?
Well, listen, Fox Sports says that the most cursed athlete was Michael Vick, Madden 2004. He suffered a broken fibula. That's not a all-pro statistic sort of thing. That was a he got injured sort of thing. Rob Gronkowski is listed as the second most cursed athlete from his cover appearance last year. We only played 8 games and had hamstring and all sorts of injury problems. Back injury was what really landed him on the injured reserve. Donovan McNabb is listed as the third most cursed. He only played 9 games. He suffered a groin injury that landed him on injured reserve in week 9 of that season, the 2005 season, right? You just went over that incredibly annoying, who knows what season we're talking about. Sean Alexander is listed here. He broke his foot in week 3 before he returned in November, but he was never the same. And Peyton Hillis, his season was just destroyed, thanks to multiple hamstring injuries in 2011. Dante Culpepper, I believe, is the last of our definitively cursed. Nope, still have one more. Dante Culpepper, he played only in 11 games in 2001. But yeah, it doesn't say anything about injury. Oh, no, he did. He had a knee injury, ended his season. And Vince Young, in 2008, he was on the Madden cover. Or Madden 08, he was on the Madden cover. And he hit the sophomore slump. I suppose I shouldn't put Vince Young in the definitively cursed category. It could be arguably cursed.
Well, okay. So let's start with your first two there, Michael Vick and Rob Gronkowski.
Yep.
I mean, what has been the big knock on them for their careers? They've been injury prone. Is it really so much of a stretch to go out and say that Michael Vick, so when he made the cover, it was only the second year he was in the league. So it was too soon to really give him the injury prone bug. But since then, he's played a total of, 13 seasons in the league. He was eligible to play for 15 seasons. So, I mean, you could count those two seasons as off field reasons he's not in the league, or you can chalk him up to his injury. But he's never really been able to play a full season. You can kind of do the Cam Newton argument with him, just that his playing style is going to lead towards more injuries. He's an absolutely fabulous athlete. When he made the cover, he was doing things that had never been seen in the league before, and so it's very possible that the league adjusted, and then between that and his style, he was going to get hurt, or it seems throughout the course of his year or career he was going to get hurt. And you can say that a very similar thing for Rob Gronkowski. He plays a very physically imposing style of football. I know prior to last year, the whole talk was, well, if Gronk can stay healthy this year. So if you're already going to, bracket this upcoming season and saying, well, if Gronk can stay healthy this year, it's a 50-50 shot. And then it turns out he misses half the games due to injury. I mean, is that really a curse, or just, what people were expecting to have happen, turn out to be?
James, do not ruin this segment with sound logic and definitive statistics and arguments. That's not the way this works. Plus, we know that the satanic rituals that are conducted in New England on a regular basis should have protected Rob Gronkowski from any sort of injury. We know this to be true. This is the things that happen in New England. So it is only that the fact that he was on the cover of Madden, a curse more powerful than any power that we know, is why Rob got hurt last season.
Okay, well then let's go with Peyton Hillis. So, I mean, he did get hurt, but he got put on the cover after a spike in production. Pro Football Reference has a great stat. It's approximate value, and it's how much a player contributed to their team. He was the second lowest player to make a Madden cover as far as this approximate value goes. He's actually right up there with another person that was on the cover for, which was Vince Young. So both of these players had very poor, approximate values that particular year. But they were both, very flashy players, very good players for what were pretty bad teams. Peyton Hillis, that next year, even with those hamstring injuries, if you had taken out his 2010 season, which, as we've covered before, is actually for the 2012 Madden cover, you take out his 2010 season, his 2011 season, his cursed year, would have been career highs in everything, even with the times missed, with the time that he had missed. Vince Young, he was a rookie when they decided to give him the cover of Madden the following year. So yeah, you had the sophomore slump. He only started 13 games his rookie year. And then the next year, he had more yards, better completion percentage, more wins. The big knock on him that year was that he didn't have any fourth quarter comebacks or game-winning drives. But his team won more games, and so they had just they were in a position to be better to begin with. They didn't need theatrics or heroics, which makes it look like that player is taking a step back.
Once again, way too much sound logic there, James. We know that Peyton Hillis, having played for the Browns, is cursed by way more than just the Madden cover. He's also got the Cleveland Browns curse. It reeks all over him.
That is very fair. I've seen lists like this before, and a lot of them list Marshall Faulk on there because he went from, you know, three straight years of, you know, Pro Bowl performance. He'd been the primary offensive weapon for the St. Louis Rams at the time. And then he had a very sharp decline to almost, I mean, he was still an above average running back, but he had a sharp decline the year after the Madden cover. But if you go back to the year after he was on the Madden cover was the 2002 NFL season. So if you go back to 1997, and here's where his total touches per season, 311, 410, 340, 334, 343. He had five straight years of more than 300 touches. I mean, that's virtually unheard of in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years in the NFL. I mean, you have Adrian Peterson, but now Adrian Peterson can't even stay healthy for a full season. So I think a lot of this Madden curse is you put a really great player who had a really great year on the cover, and then even if they just go back to their career average, it's going to look like a giant step back.
Well, Marshall Faulk made the Pro Bowl the year he was on the cover. It was the year after where he saw his decline. That's why I put him in the arguably cursed, similar to Adrian Peterson, who still had a Pro Bowl season the year he was on the cover, but missed two games due to a groin and foot injury. Drew Brees is another one of those arguable ones. He ended up throwing his career high in interceptions with 22, but still made the Pro Bowl, still had over 4,500 yards, 4,620 to be exact, and 33 touchdowns, an 11-5 record. He clearly wasn't all that cursed. Same with Odell Beckham Jr., unless we want to say that the year after, you know, getting hit in the head with a kicker's net, no, that had nothing to do with the Madden curse.
I mean, you look at the guy like Calvin Johnson. He's a great example of what they like to put up for a curse buster. He led the league the year that he led the league in receiving and yards per game the year that he made the cover. The following year, he still led the league in receiving and nearly broke 2,000 yards for the year. Led the league in receptions, yards per game. You know, he definitely had at least as good, if not a better season. When Madden first came out with Garrison Hurst on the cover in the background there, he had a career year the year after he was on the Madden cover. So, you know, maybe if we go back to the good old Garrison Hurst days, people would be saying there's not a Madden curse. There's a, you know, you get a little bit of a Madden bump. You know, the following year you had Barry Sanders who retired immediately after, or he retired that season. So his final season in the league, which was actually his least effective season in his entire career, he made the cover. So, I mean, you've got a wide range of athletes on here. It looks like Madden is actually skewing towards less experienced players in the past, you know, 5 years or so. You know, you had Peyton Hillis, who had only been 3 years in the league. Calvin Johnson, 5 years. Peterson had been in the year six, or been in the league 6 years. But, like, Sherman had only been in for 3 years. Odell had only been in for a year. You know, they're trying to get guys at the beginning of their career. And maybe it's because the vets, you know, they don't want this this stigma of the Madden curse. Maybe Tom Brady needed a couple extra dollars to try and you know, bring up his career earnings so that, you know, he's the breadwinner in the family instead of Giselle now.
Well, it'll make up, you know, for those games that he was wrongfully kept away from in the last season, but I digress.
The season he restructured his contract, so his career, his yearly salary was only $1 million, so he got fined. You know, $250,000 as opposed to the $3 or $4 million it should have been.
That's right, and now he made it up by being on the cover of Madden. Listen, we've taken up too much of the Sunday Cruise time here talking about this Madden curse. It clearly exists. Despite all of James' sound logic and statistical insights as to why it does not, it clearly does exist, people. And that is why, you know, this is something that we know goes into the works for a long time, and why we know that Bill Belichick is a genius, because he knew Brady was going to be on the cover of Madden, so he did not trade Jimmy Garoppolo. But now, a 16-0 perfect season out the window.
Well, can I just leave you with the parting wisdom of Sean Alexander?
Sure.
And when he was put on the cover of Madden and they were asking him about the curse after he broke his foot in week 3, he goes, "I'd rather be hurt and on the cover of Madden than just hurt." So one of your curse victims does not believe in the Madden curse. And he brings up a good point. You're still on the cover, even if you get hurt. And that's something, you know, getting hurt is a possibility regardless of if you're on the cover or not.
Thank you, James.
No problem, Pod.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. This is going to be a draft recap episode. I know everybody loves those, so I'm here with two of our draft experts, starting with the man from Scotland, Neil. What's up, Neil?
Hey, Justin. How are you doing? I'm suffering from a bit of a sore throat, but hey, I'm not the sort of guy who quits. I'm here for the long haul.
We admire your gumption. And we got Rob, our Bill superfan. What's up, Rob?
Nothing. Very happy. Just finished work. Have a huge glass of wine in my hand. And I'm raring to talk about some football.
Perfect. So this is a Mother's Day edition. So a big thank you and shout out to all the mothers out there, especially my wife, who I am certain will never, ever listen to this show. But I got to say that anyway. So as I said, we're going to be talking draft recap. There's not a ton of news, so let's just speed through that real quick, guys. Howard Wilson, Cleveland Browns, I want to say cornerback, was injured at rookie camp. Rookie camps are starting up all around the nation. The only other thing notable, Rob, involves your team. Sounds like you guys actually have a general manager now.
Well, we got our assistant general manager. He was added. The Bills are going to be kind of rounding out their staff. Obviously, they got rid of everybody, and they just hired, you know, they hired the general manager last week. They had the press conference. Brandon Bean, who's a Carolina guy, just like McDermott. So they're going to work together. Real interesting to see how that goes. It's the first time in a long time that the GM and coach were brought on at the same time, essentially together. So in the past, there's been a lot of infighting with the Bills front office and the Bills coaches, very dysfunctional setup, but for whatever reason, Buffalo loved doing it, so they didn't stop. This guy was the director of pro personnel from the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins actually could have blocked him going, but I guess Tannehill wanted to create a culture of upward mobility, even if it did happen to be to a division rival.
So there you go. That's it for the news.
Yep.
All right. So now, guys, let's talk draft. Now, you two were really two of our big draft experts here. And fortunately, we've got an AFC guy and an NFC guy. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Neil cover the NFC teams. Rob, we're going to have you cover the AFC teams. We're going to go division by division, have each one of you kind of spell out all of the grades. You guys ready to get to it?
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
All right, so let's just start at the top with you, Rob. Starting with your division, the AFC East. How did you have them graded out?
I actually, as a division, I thought everyone did fairly well. New England's going to get a knock for what they did, you know, for the lack of picks. But you know, we'll get into them in a second. I'm just going to go alphabetically first. My beloved Buffalo Bills. I loved what they did for the most part, trading back 17 picks. Picking up that first-round pick in 2018 from Kansas City, who, although they're a strong football team, play in one of the toughest divisions in the league, and therefore, with a first-place schedule as well, are susceptible to maybe falling off a little bit if they do get the wrong injuries. I mean, it's a long season, so you never know where that pick's going to be. So kudos to them. They still got Tre'Davious White, cornerback out of LSU. Fills a need, was good value there. I liked what they did the rest of the draft. They seemed to kind of target guys and move up a little bit to get them. They moved up, took Zay Jones in the second round. He'll play that kind of X position wide receiver across from Sammy Watkins. With Sammy not getting the option, Zay Jones could be, you know, if he's as real as they think he is, he could end up being the number one there in 2 or 3 years. Then they traded back into the second round, Deion Dawkins. I you know, he's kind of an upside guy. You know, kind of a mauler. He's got a good at it, good nasty streak to him. You know, he's from Philadelphia, so that makes sense. We'll see how the upside works with him. The rest of the draft, I was a big fan of the Peterman pick, who they got late in the compensatory picks of the fifth round, so almost in the sixth round. I thought that was a steal at that point of the draft. And then they picked up some special teams depth with Matt Milano and Tanner Vallejo. So I say good job by the Bills. If we're giving them a grade, I'd probably give them – I'd give them like a B, B plus. I don't want to be generous and give too generous, give everybody A's. But I like what they did. All right. Next, I is going to be the Miami Dolphins. I liked what they did. Their first round pick, Charles Harris. I think it's going to be good. He may start right away with them. He's going to have problems against the run, I think, but I think he's going to be able to crush the passer. The second round pick I didn't like too much because I didn't think it was a huge, huge need. Raekwon McMillan from Ohio State. I love their third round pick and their first fifth round pick, Cordea Tankersley and Isaac Asiata. Tankersley, I think, will fit in well. I liked him more than where he got picked. I thought he was a second round guy. And then they loaded up on some defensive tackles, you know, for depth. And then they took a flyer on Isaiah Ford, who went in the seventh round. I didn't think he was going to fall that far. I thought he was more of like a fifth round guy. So, you know, I guess grading them, I'd say maybe a B, B minus. Next, the New England Patriots. They only had four picks in the draft. One of them was one of my man crushes in this draft, Derek Rivers. I'm sure that because the Patriots drafted him, he's going to turn into a stud. They only took two positions in this draft. They took two defensive ends and two offensive tackles. They took Antonio Garcia, who's a high upside guy from Troy, and then they also took Connor McDermott. But if you're evaluating the draft, they also added Cooks. They added Dwayne Allen, Coney Ealy, Mike Gillisley, and Kyle Van Noy, all, you know, from their draft picks. So, you know, if you're including all them, honestly, it's obviously a build, a win now situation in New England. Who knows how long Bill Belichick's going to coach. So if you're adding all those guys, I'd honestly give them an A because they're, you know, they're setting themselves up to be a real strong team again, you know, obviously next year. And then lastly in the division, the New York Jets. I loved what they did in the first two rounds. Jamal Adams, who I had as like my number two guy, they got him at six. He's going to be their captain maybe this year. Then they added Marcus May in the second round. I think those two are going to pair up well. This kind of tells you what the team thinks of Pryor, who they drafted in the first round a couple years ago. He's a Rex Ryan holdover. My guess is it's his last year in New York. They double dipped in the wide receivers. Next, they took our Darius Stewart and Chad Hansen. I like the Hansen pick in the fourth round. Then they finally drafted a tight end. New York Jets tight ends are terrible. Jordan Leggett could honestly start on that team. So that's going to be kind of fun to watch. Their offensive coordinator has said he wants to get the tight end the ball more, which makes sense because they didn't do it for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. They also drafted a little shifty back from Louisiana Lafayette, Elijah McGuire, who I like in the sixth. And they took a couple cornerbacks to kind of finish up. I'd give the Jets draft probably, I'd say a solid B. Yeah, solid B.
A solid B, which for them is a huge improvement because that is the team that's just been such a mess lately.
They have a lot of holes to fill, so
yeah, that's true. Nobody can ever accuse them of not drafting for need because they need everything. Neil, you're up next. Let's start with the East with you as well, the NFC East, which is your division. How do you think these guys did?
Can I just ask Rob a couple of questions?
Of course.
Justin, is that okay? Rob, what did you make of the Jets taking safeties with their first two picks?
I think that the Jets are just kind of in a position that they were going best available. And I think that Pryor, they have no allegiance to Pryor in any way. He's underperformed. And also, he wasn't drafted by that regime. So, you know, he's their fourth year in. He hasn't played particularly well. I think he had about a good half a year, not even this year, the year before. So you go, I think Adams was a no-brainer. And I think Marcus May, you know, you pair with him, he can kind of play that free safety to, you know, Jamal Adams strong safety, but you may not even need to label him. It was the, you know, for them, it was the best value. They have so many needs. I think they just were looking for the best available, and they were, you know, they happened to have safety as a priority. This was a great track for safeties, as we've already, you know, talked about numerous times. And, you know, it just kind of puts Pryor on notice.
Yeah, sure. And the one final thing I would have for you with the Dolphins, I wonder where Charles Harris will actually end up playing. Is he going to be an outside linebacker, or is he going to be a stand-up end?
They're running a 4-3 this year still, I think. I'm pretty certain.
Yeah.
I know they switched their defensive coordinator, but I'm pretty certain they're still running a 4-3. So I would imagine he's going to play with his hand in the ground at end. That's the way I pictured it. So that's why, you know, my question with him is, you know, stopping the run.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think it's going to be a little bit of an issue for, I don't think he's going to be able to hold up, run it, you know, in a run game. But I think he's going to be able to, even with his hand in the dirt, be able to rush the passer, which I think is, you know, their prime. It was one of their primary focuses in the draft this year.
Certainly, if Cameron Wake's there on the other side, him on one side and Harris on the other, that's quite lightweight in the running game.
But yeah, that would be the concern. I mean, they have obviously their defense. You know, teams are going to pay attention to Sue, but they, you know, it could be a problem. Teams that like to run counters and run outside. And things like that. And maybe, you know, they're going to have to scheme for it if those two are their starters.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, Justin, moving on to the NFC East. Start with the Dallas Cowboys. They, of course, took tackle Charlton as their first round pick. Now I'm just going to give you guys from each team that that I liked, or moves that I liked, moves I didn't like. I'm going to give you one to watch as well out of the draft. Maybe a guy not in the first couple of rounds, somebody you might not have heard of. Looking forward to the upcoming season, and I'll give you a grade as well. So the Dallas Cowboys, they took tackle Charlton, not a guy I liked. They're going to be playing well. He looks like a 4-3 end to me, so we'll see. I think he's a bit overrated, and I wonder there. Didn't they also have the opportunity to take T.J. Ward at this point? And I don't know, I think TJ Ward maybe higher up my board than tackle Charlton was. He's a big guy, tall, rangy, but he's also slow and has a turning circle of an oil tanker. So let's see what he can do next year. I'm not convinced by that one. It's not a move I liked. Then the next couple of rounds, they took Chidobe Awuzie and Jordan Lewis. Lewis has got a bit of off-field stuff, but two very talented cornerbacks. And good pieces for their secondary. I like those moves. And in terms of a guy to look out for, one to watch, look out for round four, North Carolina wide receiver Ryan Switzer. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but I think he'll be a decent slot receiver, a bit like Jamison Crowder or the guy they have already whose name escapes me right now, playing in the slot. Is it Cole Beasley? I think it's Cole Beasley.
Yeah.
And overall, I'd give them probably a B grade. I'm not going to be as complicated as Rob there and give you pluses and minuses, Justin. I'm just going to give you A, B, C, or D. Because to be perfectly honest with you, listener, I have no idea what the difference is between a B plus and a C minus, or a C plus and a B minus. So just go with A, B, C, or D. So a B for Dallas. Then on to the New York Giants. What I liked about the Giants draft, not an awful lot. Round two, Dalvin Tomlinson from Alabama, good run defender, and the Giants always like to stuff guys there in the middle. They lost Hankins in free agency, so I think he'll fit in there and give them a good solid guy against the run. He doesn't give you much in the pass rush department, but maybe he gives you a little bit more than some of the other guys who were available from the defensive tackle position at that point. The first round pick, of course, everybody knows one of my favorite players in the draft, and Evan Engram. But I think this constitutes the term luxury pick. And although Engram is a terrific player, going forward he's going to be compared to David Njoku, who I think went a few picks later in this draft. Njoku is a more complete tight end. And the Giants almost sort of have a history, don't they, of taking the sort of Larry Donnell, 6 foot six, 265-pound tight ends. So we'll see. And do they need Engram? He's basically a slightly larger version of Brandon Marshall, and I'm not sure where he fits in that offense, but certainly a terrific receiver, but maybe a bit of a luxury pick. I did not like Davis Webb, the California quarterback, in the third round. Is he going to be a player for them? I'm not convinced by him whatsoever. And I have to ask myself with the Giants, where was the running back? The running back didn't appear on the board until the fourth round, where they got Clemson running back Wayne Gallman. He'll get a shot to start, but I thought the Giants would probably look to get one of the better running backs, maybe a Kamara, or even trade up and take Dalvin Cook. I didn't think they had a very good draft overall, so I gave them a D grade, so right at the bottom of the pile for the Giants. The Philadelphia Eagles, I think they got the perfect defensive end there in Barnett for a Jim Schwartz defense. Barnett's a relentless pass rusher. He doesn't have the grace or the moves that Myles Garrett does, but he has production, and he's never going to give up on a play, and that fits perfectly with Schwartz. I was questioning, though, why they didn't use the first-round pick on a cornerback. They're desperately in need of cornerbacks. And, yeah, I think that was something they certainly missed from their draft. I didn't like they missed that out. But a guy to watch for you, Justin, I'll give you two guys from the Philadelphia draft. We'll take in round six, they took Washington nose tackle Elijah Qualls. Great pick, nose tackle. And he's the sort of guy who can come in and replace Benny Logan, who they lost, I think, to the Chiefs in free agency. He's a good player. Obviously, nose tackles are not valued as highly these days, but they're still good for 20-odd plays in the game. So I think he'll be fine. He could be a real steal in the sixth round. And I'll also give you, in round four, the running back slash kick returner slash quick guy who runs all over the field, Donnell Pumphrey, who I think will be there to learn from Sproles and certainly give that offense a little bit of a spark, which they probably need, looking back at last year's offense. So I'm giving the Philadelphia Eagles a B grade, because I thought Barnett was an absolutely perfect fit for them. He wasn't a reach at all. He just fell right in a nice spot for them. So I like him a lot. And on to my own team, Washington. I think in Jonathan Allen, they may well have got the steal of round one. He fell to the 17th selection, where I think Washington have already said, and other teams have said, he was in the top two or three picks in terms of talent. He dropped, of course, for the perceived shoulder issues, which didn't seem to stop him at all in his last couple of years. So, yeah, let's hope that's fine. He looks like a terrific player. And, of course, just what Washington needs on that defensive line. He's already our best player on the defensive line, and he hasn't played a snap. And I also liked Fabian Moreau, the cornerback who they got in the third round. I think he will eventually start for Washington and may well save them a little bit of cap money next year, because Breland is up for free agency next year. And if Moreau pans out, I don't think we'll be seeing Breland in Washington, and we should save some cash there. What I didn't like about Washington's draft really was that they didn't go for a developmental quarterback. I think Nate Peterman went to Rob's Bills, and that was, what, fifth round, Rob?
The fifth round, but it was a compensatory pick in the fifth. So, like,
yeah,
the last two or three picks of, like, the 45 picks in the fifth round.
Yeah, so I was disappointed Washington didn't take him third or fourth round or another developmental quarterback, because we all know that Kirk Cousins, yeah, is a pretty high percentage chance that he won't be at Washington next year. So why not take a guy and see if they find something there? In terms of a player to look out for next year, look out for sixth round Georgia State wide receiver Robert Davis, who, big guy, 6'3", 220, and yeah, ran pro routes in college. I think somebody to look out for. So I've given Washington, same as Philadelphia, a B grade. And that wraps up my NFC East.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Rob, How do you feel about Neil's grade of his team? The reason I ask is I always find it so hard to grade your own team. You know, you're always so much more kind of cynical about their decision-making process. Where would you put Washington?
I liked what Washington did as far as, like, the beginning. Like, Jonathan Allen, you know, obviously teams are concerned about what is it? It's the shoulder with him, right? So, I mean, if it checks out, like, they got a top, like, seven guy at 17. So, like, killer value. I thought they might take a middle, like a middle linebacker of some sort. And I definitely thought they'd take a quarterback of some sort throughout the draft, which they didn't. But overall, I thought it was, I know Robert Davis is someone that Neil actually was a huge fan of prior to the draft. I think you took him in our mock, didn't you?
I certainly did. Yes. Hi. Yeah.
And then, like, for a late pick, Josh Harvey Clemens, I'm interested to see where they actually play him. I know he's listed at safety. Are they going to do the hybrid thing with him as well?
Yeah, I think they'll start him at corner and then take it from there. But certainly, okay, he shows that sort of ability to be a hybrid sort of defensive back, certainly.
Yeah, I think Perrine, honestly, I don't follow Washington as much as I follow some other teams, but I think Perrine could end up leading the – can he lead the team in carries? I feel like he could. Like that. Oh. So I liked that fourth-round pick. I like their – overall, I like their draft. Since we're not doing a plus or minus, I would give them a solid B.
All right, so keeping up with you, Rob, let's move on to the next AFC division. This is going to be the AFC North. That's the Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, and Browns. How did you grade them out?
All right, well, so we'll start with the Ravens. They went with Marlon Humphrey in the first round, who I liked. I didn't necessarily like at 16, though. I thought they could have gone maybe – you know, a little different. I know he has a tendency to possibly get burned. That being said, they need cornerbacks. You know, going through the rest of their draft, they took a Saragusa, which, since it's the Ravens, I like. They took Nico in the fourth round. They added a couple, you know, outside linebackers for their system, Tyus Bowser, Tim Williams, in the second and third round, respectively. If one of them hits, you know, it'll definitely help. It'll be a much needed, you know, addition to their pass rush. I liked Tim Williams. Bowser, I mean, we'll see what happens. One of them's going to pan out because they always do a good job in the second, third, fourth round of finding guys that work. They added two guards. Now, Illuminor, the guy from Texas A&M, I think could play tackle. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. Their draft, I don't love this draft as much as other Ravens drafts, so I'm going to give them a C. Cincinnati Bengals, they kind of fell true to what they typically do, which is hashtag draft Twitter, doing their draft for them. I don't know if you follow the Cincinnati Bengals drafts, but it seems like it's always they take guys that Twitter loves. I felt the first two rounds they definitely took chances on. Josh Ross could – I mean, he could be the best receiver in this draft, but he's got injury issues. So we'll see what happens. But he's in a good spot if he stays healthy. Joe Mixon, I love as a running back. I think he's going to be the number one back there, maybe straight away. I know that Hill is this is his last year under contract with the Bengals. So, you know, let's see what happens to Jeremy Hill. Third and the fourth round, they went defensive ends, you know, Jordan Willis, Carl Walson. So adding some depth there, which seems to be something that they do quite a bit of. They took another chance on a receiver, Josh Malone. He's a kind of a flyer. They took a kicker pretty early, Jake Elliott from Memphis. So they want to shore up the special teams. And then shout out to their seventh round pick, Mason Schreck, the athletic tight end from the University of Buffalo. You know, I'd say for their draft, I want to give them a C, but they swung for the fences on a couple of guys, and if it really works out, they could easily be an A. You know, when we look back on this you know, in 2 years. If Ross works out, I think Mixon is more likely to work out. And the defensive ends, if one of the two, you know, pans out to be, you know, a good guy, I think this is going to be a really good draft for them.
Isn't there a chance, Rob, that all four of those picks could not pan out? What's the percentage balance there, I wonder?
I don't know. Like, Ross I like as a receiver because he's not just a fast guy. Like, he's a receiver who happens to be ridiculously fast, as opposed to, like, the bit from the Bills now with Washington, Marquise Goodwin. He's a really fast guy who happens to play wide receiver in the NFL. You know, Josh Ross could be, you know, the way DeSean Jackson was in his prime. You know, and Joe Mixon, you know, the way they, you know, could be kind of combined what this team liked to do with, you know, Hill and Giovanni. You know, he could end up getting, you know, 70% of the share there once Hill gets out of the way. And Giovanni, I'm not sure what his contract status is, but I'm guessing he's not there for like 4 or 5 years or anything, you know. So I think Mixon could end up being a beast. But if he regresses and does something stupid again and Ross hurts his knee and the defensive ends, you know, just don't pan out, you know, it could definitely be a terrible draft for sure. That's why I'm giving him a C, because I like the chances they took, but they're still big chances because they're using first and second round picks in a real not guaranteed way. They're taking shots, and I just don't like a team that's, you know, finished with the 9th worst record in the NFL taking chances. You know, it's worrisome.
Yeah.
Next, Cleveland Browns, and man, I got to tell you, we talked about this off air. I love what the Cleveland Browns are doing. Obviously, Myles Garrett, easiest pick of the draft. I didn't love the Jabril Peppers pick. I felt like whoever took Peppers is going to be a team that could afford to take a luxury pick. And obviously that's like Cleveland's like the opposite of that. But, you know, maybe they got a plan for what they're going to do with him defensively. You know, his kick returning skills, I think, will help. I love the Joku pick at 29. I think he could end up being, you know, the second best tight end in this draft. I know that the, you know, the numbers guys love, you know, he puts up those numbers guys stats. So, you know, he's a darling of like PFF and things like that. So, you know, they took the flyer on Kaiser in the second round. I don't think Kaiser's going to turn into a productive NFL quarterback, but man, if he does, this draft is going to be really good. They took Ogunjobi in the third round. He's going to be a solid defensive tackle for them. Howard Wilson, the cornerback, we discussed that earlier, who just got injured, but he adds depth. And then they went offensive line, defensive line. They took the big chance on Caleb Brantley. That's going to be interesting, kind of what happens with that. And they've already said that if things change, they're going to cut him. So I kind of like that they came out and said that. Roderick Johnson, I thought, was value in the fifth round, the tackle from Free Sneaker University, Florida State. And, you know, they took a kicker as well, trying to shore up the special teams. They took Zane Gonzalez. He's going to find out it's different kicking in Cleveland than it is kicking in Arizona State. Cleveland's just in the spot where they're adding the best player on their board. I loved what they did. I'm giving Cleveland an A. I really hope this works out for them. I hope with last year's draft, this year's draft, they also picked up an extra first-round pick in 18, courtesy of the Houston Texans. It's always fun when you're able to take advantage of a team desperate to move up for a quarterback. So good for them. So yeah, their draft I liked. And I guess the last team is the Pittsburgh Steelers. With them, their first round pick, you know, they took Watt, who's obviously the brother of TJ Watt. He's going to play that, you know, outside linebacker position for them. I think he's going to be a good fit. Their second round pick, I felt like it was a luxury pick. But that being said, if any team can get away with it, it's Pittsburgh. I feel like they just keep on hitting and hitting and hitting on third, fourth, fifth round wide receivers. And they went and took Juju Smith-Schuster in the second round. The third round pick, James Conner, was obviously a big story. He could end up being, you know, the number two guy in an area where their number one is a one more time getting caught smoking weed, or one more silly injury away from being out for quite a while. So I like that. They took Josh Dobbs as a developmental. So now they have Landry as the backup, and Dobbs they're kind of working through, you know, to see what they can get out of him. I like Dobbs. I thought he'd go in round three, not round four. So good for them. You know, we're going to grade Pittsburgh. I'd probably give them a C. You know, TJ Watt was a nice pick in the first round. And yeah, Stansikly, he was definitely still on the board when Dallas picked. He went 30. Juju Smith, although, you know, they loved him, obviously, because the team, they didn't necessarily need a receiver, at least early enough in the second round. And I do like the picks of Connor and Dobbs in the third and fourth round.
Feeling Greg is going to have an opinion on your opinion on his
Steelers. Fine.
So, when you're doing your grade of Cleveland, obviously you gave them an A. How much credit are you giving them for the picks that they accumulated next year?
I'm throwing that in because I think it's part of the process. Like, if
would they be an A without those picks?
I mean, it'd probably be a B without those picks, but I think you have to include what they've picked up because it was part of the moves they made. You know, mm-hmm. So I thought they maneuvered well. They took it, in my opinion, they took advantage of Houston getting desperate because they wanted to get one of the quarterbacks, and Kansas City traded up and getting Mahomes, and Chicago trading up and getting Trubisky, kind of put them in a spot where they had to trade up, and they gave up really big value. I think Barnwell had a from ESPN had an article about this. They gave up what was equivalent to, I think, the fourth overall pick to move up to get this guy. You know, so kudos to Cleveland for, you know, being open-minded, willing to wait on their quarterback. Because Kaiser, I think Watson has a much better shot at being a productive starter than Kaiser does. But I don't think either is, like, insanely high. Like, I don't think they missed out on a can't-miss guy. So kudos to them for being open-minded, being patient, and making that trade.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, Neil, we're going to throw it back to you. We probably should pick up our pace a little bit. Let's go with the NFC North. So Vikings, Packers, Lions, Bears. Oh, my.
Yep, the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers. I'm sorry, Green Bay fans. I'm grading you guys a D right at the bottom of my list. For one thing, really, or two things, I guess, really. Although I liked you grabbing Jamal Williams in the fourth round, and he'd be my one to watch there. Fourth round, they need more running back help than that. That's one of for me, going into this draft, running back and pass rush were the two biggest needs for Green Bay. I saw Green Bay against Washington last year, and their pass rush was pathetic, to be honest, for a team who ended up doing so well. And I would say Clay Matthews, he's not getting any better. And he's not getting any younger. So I was surprised they didn't go pass rush in the first round or so. They traded down, of course, and grabbed Kevin King, the cornerback. Yeah, good solid pick, and sure, they needed defensive back help. But you can have two Richard Shermans, you can have your Legion of Boom right across that Green Bay defensive secondary. But if they're getting no heat on the quarterback, your best cornerbacks on earth can't stop every pass and stop key passes. You need pass rush in this league, and they don't have any, and they missed a chance this year of getting some. Okay, they took Montrevious Adams later in the draft, but he's primarily a run stuffer who'll give you a little bit of pass rush, but they really needed edge pass rush here. And in such a good draft for edge pass rush, I'm surprised they didn't get any for the team. So, yeah, that's why they're getting a D from me. The Minnesota Vikings, last year, of course, they did the trade for Sam Bradford. So Sam Bradford was their first-round pick this year. And, of course, I'm not a fan of that draft at all. That trade at all. So, yeah, it doesn't get a high grade for me for that. They took Pat Elflein as their first pick in this draft. I liked him. I'm mistaken there, Justin. They took Elflein later in the draft. Dalvin Cook, of course, was their first pick. And Dalvin Cook, yeah, like Cincinnati, one of these players who's risky, off-field problems, injury problems. But when he plays like a first-round talent. So let's see what he can do there. Might give Bradford a little bit of help there in terms of taking some pressure off him. Elflein could come in and play at center. But this wasn't a great offensive line draft. And the guys who were at the top of the boards, like Elflein and so, where would they be normally? Yeah, they're probably a lower round selection. So I'm not a great fan of that pick either. I did very much like the pick in round four, Iowa nose tackle Jaleel Johnson. I do love myself a nose tackle, Justin. And he'd be my one to watch. And because they got him so in the fourth round, which was great value, I'm going to give them a B grade, primarily because I think without the first round pick, they still managed to get a first round talent in Dalvin Cook. And it's fingers crossed, toes crossed, and anything else you want crossed that he turns out to be a player and not a bust. The Detroit Lions up next. They took Jared Davis, a solid, if unspectacular, pick in the first round. I was kind of hoping they would go for more of an edge guy to add to their pass rush, but I think Davis will be fine. He's one of these players who comes in and plays 10 years at a very high level, a few Pro Bowls thrown in. He can do everything. Excuse me. He can do everything in terms of against the run and against the pass. So let's see what he does there. But a good solid pick. They took Tease Tabor then, following up from Davis. I think Rob's probably a bigger fan, or certainly Chris was a fan of Tease Tabor. I see he's 40 time, and I can see that causing him a problem in the NFL where he's playing against elite wide receivers week in, week out. But let's see. On tape, he looked very, very good. In shorts, not so much. So we'll see about him. So not a pick I like there so high. In round four, my one to watch, Toledo's Michael Roberts, big tight end, and another goal line target there, red zone target for Stafford. Quite like that pick. I thought he was probably a round three tight end, but because this year's draft was so deep in the tight end position, he's probably dropped around there. So I'm going to give them a C grade overall, mainly because I think they probably, I could have got a better player than Davis in round one, although Davis is fine, and they could have got a better player in round two rather than Tease Tabor. On to the Chicago Bears, and this is the one that I probably go against the grain here. I liked the Trubisky trade. Now, I don't particularly like Trubisky as a player. He's not a player I would have selected for Washington. I did think he was the best of the quarterbacks. I think he's the quarterback with the most potential. And I have to say, they gave up 2 third-round picks and a fourth. That was a third and fourth, I think, this year, and a third next year. I don't think that's all bad. Now, okay, they only moved up one spot, and maybe they were betting against themselves in that move. But I've said this many times before, Justin. If you're going to go hard. And Chicago, they liked the guy. They wanted to move up. Then they went and did it. And I would much sooner my team did that than my team sat and basically went for the safe pick and looked a bit dull and boring forevermore. Have a go. And I tend to find if you make moves, try and do stuff, eventually things will pay off for you. I think fortune favors the brave. Is that the saying? So let's hope that's the case for Chicago. I have no problem at all with the Trubisky trade. In fact, I really quite liked it. So give them a bit of credit for that, for being bold. Into the second round, and they took Adam Shaheen. Now, he was the small school guy who was this massive freak of nature, a huge, huge guy, almost offensive tackle sized. Let's see. He was playing a small ball. Let's see how he looks in the big league. I think it may be a bit of a reach. He could turn out to be a terrific player, or he could turn out to be a bust, and I think that's probably a risk Chicago may not have been in the position to make with no third round pick. So yeah, they gave up those picks, took a risky player. Yeah, not quite so keen. But Shaheen does look good on tape. You got to say that. But they did leave a lot of defensive talent on the board at that point. And I did wonder, well, should they be taking the best available defensive player just to keep stocking up on that side of the ball? The guy I would say would be my one to watch with them would be fourth round pick, Alabama safety Eddie Jackson. A bit of an injury casualty last season, but he's got starting ability if he gets back to full fitness. And yeah, overall, I'm reasonably happy with Chicago's draft. And they got the quarterback, and they haven't given up the first round pick next year. So let's see how that pans out. I'm going to give them a B grade, and that's the NFC North.
Nice work. All right, Rob, let's toss it back to you. This time we're going to go into the AFC South. So the Texans, the Jaguars, the Colts, and the Titans.
All right, I'll start with Houston, and I hate that they gave up their honestly,
already.
Yeah, like I hate to do it, but I hate that they gave up their first round pick next year for Deshaun Watson. They moved up quite a bit to get him. I kind of talked about it earlier when we were talking about Cleveland. I mean, their whole draft is really going to hinge on what he turns into, but he's not going to see the field this year because, you know, the coach there, O'Brien, has kind of already said that he doesn't trust a rookie with his complex scheme. So, you know, he's going to get a chance to build, but that means where they lose their pick is going to be dependent on Tom Savage. So good luck to the Houston Texans. I like the Foreman pick in the third round. Foreman is the running back out of Texas. I think he's going to be a good number two to Lamar Miller. I like Carlos Watkins in Clemson. He was their second fourth round pick. I thought that he was for the fourth round. I thought it was quite a bit of value. Other than that, I mean, Davenport has some upside out of Bucknell. They took him in the fourth. But they didn't address defensive back till the fifth round. And I thought that they would draft a corner earlier with as good as the corners were in this draft and the fact that they lost their number one corner to free agency. So that I thought was a little bit puzzling. So for me, I'm going to give them a C. And if Watson doesn't pan out, it's going to be they're an F. Like, it's not going to be a good draft. The next team, the Indy Colts, I love their first-round pick. They took Malik Hooker. I thought that they did a good job building back their defense. They took Quincy Wilson in the second round. So the first two rounds, hitting defensive backs, which was the big strength of the draft. Marlon Mack, they took out of South Florida. I mean, just kind of given their situation, I think he could be, their starter by the middle of the year, maybe towards the end of the year. And, in 2018, unless they do something more substantial to, address the position. I think if you're looking for a sleeper, Grover Stewart out of Albany State, who was kind of the darling of pre-draft workouts. I think he had something like 20 visits to teams. So a lot of people were interested in him. I was also a big fan of Nate Harrison. If the team's going to be playing, like a zone cover three, cover two shell type system, he's going to be, a good fit. And I think he's got a lot of high upside. I'd give Indy a solid B. The Jacksonville Jaguars, I love their first round pick. Leonard Fournette fits what they're going to do. Marone likes to run the ball. Good for them. He's going to be the workhorse there. Marone was able to get, over 1,000 yards out of Fred Jackson, I think a couple times. So I think he's going to do quite well with Fournette. They took a chance on Cam Robinson. They traded up, or no, excuse me. They drafted Cam Robinson in the second round, who could kind of go either way. I think he could be a really good right tackle. I'm interested to see D.D. Westbrook. Teams had a lot of problems with some of the off the field stuff with him. But he's a speed guy. It's going to be kind of fun to watch with him. And then lastly, in the seventh round, they took a flyer on Jalen Myrick, the cornerback from Minnesota, who's another kind of speed merchant. That being said, with the Jacksonville Jaguars draft, which was ran by Tom Coughlin, other than the first round pick, I really didn't love it. So I'd give them probably a C. And let's see. So we covered them. So the last team's going to be the Tennessee Titans. I thought they had a kind of a surprise in the first round. I think both picks were at least a little bit of a surprise in the first round. Although I love the first one, Corey Davis. I think that what he does is going to work real well with what Mariota does as a quarterback. I didn't like the Adoree Jackson pick at 18. I think that they could have traded back there and, you know, picked up an extra pick or two and still got their guy. That being said, he's going to be a real solid kick returner. I also like Taywan Taylor, their wide receiver. I think he's going to fit in well also, right in the slot. Other than that, just going down and looking at what they did, nothing really stands out too much to me. You know, they got a flyer in Brad Seaton. He's someone who could be kind of a high upside guy. And then I do like Jonnu Smith, the tight end from Florida International. You may know him as the guy who pressed charges on his pregnant girlfriend because she dumped scalding hot boiling water on him while he was playing video games, which is not very nice, by the way. I don't think he was a third round pick, though. I think he could have gone maybe a little bit later. So I would probably give the Titans a C as well.
Man, I didn't know that boiling hot water story, though.
Just looking at you're talking about Indianapolis's draft there. Actually, I was really impressed there, thinking they got Hooker and Wilson in the first two rounds. Two players they selected after the Jets were their picks in the first two rounds of Adams and May. So who do you want? I'd take Hooker and Wilson over Adams and May.
I could see why. And I think that Indy wins the second round pick battle when you're comparing the two. My worry with Hooker, although I think he's going to be a standout NFL player, is that he really only played one season, and there's just, you know, he was in just, you know, Ohio State is just full of studs. So he really just, you know, he got to play that kind of roaming free safety role. You know, I'm interested to see what Indy does with him and, you know, how he fits there. I think that's a fair statement. I may take it. I think I could take Indy ahead of them. To me, it's pretty close, you know, for sure. I definitely like Jamal Adams more than Malik Hooker, but I like Quincy Wilson, you know, more than Marcus May as far as, a second-round draft pick.
Yep. The game of opinions.
Well, that's why we have a podcast, right? All right, Neil, I'm going to throw it to you. NFC South, so you got the Buccaneers, Saints, Panthers, and Falcons.
Oh, thanks for that, Justin. Good to know which teams are in the South. In terms of, my highest grade of the NFC draft went to one of the four teams in this division. One team got an A, my only A in the NFC. You guys want to have a bash of which team it was?
New
Orleans, Atlanta, Tampa, or Carolina?
Tampa.
What do you think, Rob? Tampa? Tampa. That's kind of what I was leaning towards.
Yeah, both going for Tampa?
I'm going with Tampa, yeah.
Okay, that's a no then for you two. You're both out. Right. Bye-bye. So, the New Orleans Saints, I'll go with them first. They got Marshawn Lattimore at number 11. Pick I loved at number 11. Okay, Chris is worried about his muscle injuries, but hey, you cannot turn down Marshawn Lattimore at number 11. This is a guy who was up there in the sort of super seven of talents in this draft. A clean player, a top player, can play any position there at corner, can play in any scheme. You couldn't turn him down, and he just kind of fell into their laps. It's all the Christmases coming at once. players I didn't like, or draft picks I didn't like that they made. I liked Alvin Kamara as a player, but I'm not convinced that giving up a future or a 2018 second round pick to move up in the third round to take Kamara was good value at all. I thought that was a bit of a, well, this is the dreaded luxury pick term. Good player, and well, he's joining a running back group with, well, Adrian Peterson, who they signed a week prior to the draft, and Mark Ingram, who's just coming off a 1,000-yard season and arguably his best season in the league. So yeah, I think that was a bit of a reach, and maybe not the greatest use of next year's second round pick, which we never know. It could be a really high pick if Drew Brees goes out injured this year and they end up playing the season with a backup quarterback. What are they going to be? A top 10 pick possibly in that second round. So yeah, I don't like that at all. They took at the end of the first round for the pick they got from New England Patriots, Ryan Ramczyk, the offensive tackle. And I can see they wanted to build up their offensive line, but I thought they should have taken another defensive player at this pick. Now, maybe I think there was a conversation that weren't they on the phone to Reuben Foster, and then Foster got a call from the 49ers GM, and he just put the phone down on the Saints, and the 49ers took him a pick earlier. I think that's how the story went. So maybe they were a bit flustered there and ended up taking Ramczyk just as their best player on the board. And fair enough if that was the guy for them, but I thought they probably needed defensive help. Then looking at player to watch in the future, I think the third round they took Florida's linebacker Alex Anzalone. And if he can stay injury free, and that's a big if, then he could be a really good solid player for them. But yeah, just for the fact alone, they got Lattimore at number 11, just falling into their laps. I graded them a B. The Carolina Panthers, they went and took, they took McCaffrey early, didn't they? And then Samuel at the top of the second round. I'm kind of wondering, are they basically the same guy? I'm not sure. We'll find out. Obviously, they wanted to add smaller, faster guys on that offense. And yeah, that's a good, solid move. But I wonder if they could have used that second round pick maybe on an offensive lineman. I imagine Forrest Lamp was probably still on the board at that point. Maybe they could have taken him. Things I didn't really like were they didn't address the DB position until the fifth round. And for a team, I think, probably in desperate need of defensive backs, and in this super deep defensive back draft, I think that may have been a bit of an error on their part. And again, I go back to the question, how do they get Samuel and McCaffrey on the field at the same time with the other players they have on offense? It'll be an interesting one to watch over the course of the season. In terms of a player to watch in camp this year, look for that fifth round DB. That's Miami cornerback Corn Elder, who not only is a good player, but what a great name, Justin. Corn Elder. Can't miss with him. He's small, but I think he could probably be a decent slot corner. And certainly one to keep an eye on. I've graded the Carolina Panthers a C because I think they may well have gone down the luxury pick route, taking both McCaffrey and Samuel. I also do wonder, is McCaffrey the sort of player who's going to be successful in that offense? Yeah, we'll see. Then we've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they took at number 19, O.J. Howard, who again was part of my sort of Super 7 in terms of clean top talent. So a real steal for them there. I'm surprised he lasted to 19. But there he was sitting there. They took him, and that's an excellent pick. A guy who can do both the blocking and the pass catching, and yeah, also a player who I think will give a really decent red zone option to the offense there for Tampa Bay. Good solid pick, classy guy, quality player. The second round, I think it was the second round, it took Justin Evans, the Texas A&M safety. I had a feeling that was maybe a bit of a reach, maybe a round too early for Justin Evans. We'll see. But I didn't really like that pick. And then really a player to watch from the draft, And here we go, Justin. I'm going to test my throat out big time here. In round seven, they took USC nose tackle Stevie Tulukoluvatu, who henceforth will be known as Big Stevie. So Big Stevie comes in there as nose tackle. I think he'll make the roster quite easily there, and I quite liked it. Seeing him at USC, he made a few bad plays, but he also made some good plays. But he looks that sort of player who can develop into quite an athletic nose tackle. So Big Stevie, we're looking forward to seeing you next year. I give them a B grade simply because OJ Howard, that was a terrific pick. One of the best picks in this entire draft for me. And finally, the team that's got the A grade, the Atlanta Falcons, who I thought absolutely nailed this draft. They got Tag McKinley, who prior to draft night was a guy we saw as being stacked with potential. Good burst off the edge and the ability to develop into a decent pass rusher. And on draft night, we realized that this was a guy who was made for TV. His post-NFL career sorted. And I want that sort of character in my locker room. I love what he did in that draft night. Okay, he dropped a swear word. Oh my goodness, how can we ever cope with that? I don't really care. I like to see the fire, the passion in the guy. And I'm sure we're going to see that in the locker room. We're going to see that on the field. They also added then another linebacker, Duke Riley, who I think will fit into their system of smaller, faster linebackers really well. And I've put in my column here under the column what I didn't like about the draft, and I've simply written nothing. I thought all the picks looked really good. I think in the fourth round, the player to watch, Oregon State guard Sean Harlow, I think he's a potential day one starter. And if you got that in the fourth round, then well done you. So yeah, A grade for the Falcons. That wraps up the South. And yeah, some really good solid picks in that division.
Once again, your love affair for nose tackles, very well established.
Absolutely.
All right, Rob, AFC West, Chiefs, Broncos, Raiders, Chargers, go.
All right, let's go. The Broncos draft, their first-round pick, Garrett Bowles, I didn't necessarily love him. I figured he'd be a first-round pick. I think that's the type of system, though, he's going to work out real well in. I think he could potentially be a beast in his own blocking scheme, which is kind of what Denver has done for quite a while. Assuming that they keep that offense of, kind of like that with zone principles and techniques, give him a year to maybe put some muscle on the lower half. I think he could end up being really well. Other than that, it's not a draft that I loved. I thought DeMarcus Walker, I thought he was a little bit of a stretch in the second round. I did like that in the fifth round, they took a chance. Good teams can draft players that are injured and, kind of stash him away. They took Jake Butt in the fifth round. I think Jake Butt, if he was 100% healthy, would have been a second-round pick. I do like the Isaiah McKenzie pick as well. Kick returner. He can play a little wide receiver, but I think, just for special teams, I think he's going to be all right. And then the last pick, the whole reason why I'm giving this team a B is Mr. Irrelevant, Swag Kelly, the quarterback of the future for the Denver Broncos. I kid, he's from my area and has quite the little reputation from back home. But if he can get his head on straight and figure it out, I think he could be an NFL quarterback. But we shall see. Next, we're going to talk about who is it next? Kansas City.
Hey, Rob.
Yes.
Rob, if he was called Chad Brown, would you still be feeling the same, or is it that Kelly name that's getting him?
I think it's the swag name. No, listen, he does come from the pedigree. I like him. I probably am showing a little bit of bias, in all honesty, because obviously Jim Kelly is a king back home. Still lives in the area, by the way. Good guy. I think he's got a shot. I mean, people who were saying that he's a talented quarterback who is just a mental midget. So it's worth taking the shot with the last pick in the draft. So you don't have to try to fight for him as an undrafted free agent. Because he's the type of player that teams will bring in as a guy off the streets and not waste a draft pick on. So if you're going to do it, use the last one. So good for them. Kansas City Chiefs. I love their draft because they decided to give a lot, you know, some of next year to the Buffalo Bills. I think I'll get inside. I think for them, you know, obviously it's just going to come down to Patrick Mahomes. If he develops and turns into a good quarterback, they're going to have a good draft. If he doesn't, this is going to be a year that Kansas City fans look at and they're like, oh. The second round pick. Neil, I know you love their second round pick.
I certainly do.
Oh, yeah, you do. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. I'm just going to call him. Can I call him Big Tano?
Tano Passignon.
Passignon. All right. Well, I think in that 3-4. Could be Big Dave. Yeah, I think in that 3-4, he found a home. He's gonna play. He's going to be good. All you people that play fantasy football, their third-round pick, keep an eye on Kareem Hunt. They traded up to get him, which means they obviously liked him quite a bit in this draft. He could end up being the starter there by next year, and it's an offense that this is a very running back friendly offense. All the way back to LeSean McCoy, Ryan Westbrook. So if you know the starting running back for Kansas City, which is the same thing as saying, you know, Philadelphia Eagles back in the day, always very very friendly to their running back. So he has a shot to put up some juicy numbers. Overall with the draft, I'd probably give him a C. If I'm a Kansas City fan, I don't love giving up the 2018 first. But that being said, they've been doing such a good job with the draft, and they didn't really have a lot of needs that, you know, you might as well take a swing for the fences. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Next, the Chargers. I like their draft more than some people did. That being said, I didn't love their first-round pick, Mike Williams. I thought at 7 was a touch of a reach. I just worry about separation. And the fact that they have good receivers in LA. I almost said San Diego. So it's going to be kind of interesting this where he shows up on the depth chart. I thought the biggest need was offensive line. And I do like that they address that with the next two picks with Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney. Looking next, I think Rayshon Jenkins has some, what does Arizona call it? Their money backer position. They're kind of hybrid linebacker, safety. I think he's got potential for that. Other than that, Desmond King, I thought was pretty good value in the 5th round. I'm going to give the Chargers a B. I know some people didn't really care for their draft all that much. And then the last team was, I leave us with the Oakland Raiders. Man, they're taking a chance on their first-round pick, Gary and Conley. He hasn't been cleared yet, right? Like officially cleared, right? I don't think I've seen them yet.
Not yet.
Okay. I mean, this could blow up in their face. That being said, they feel good about it. Every team has their own guys that they go to for things like this. And they feel comfortable. So, you know, if they went there, they also did the cornerback safety thing in the first two rounds. They took Obi Melifonwu in the second. Vander does, the defensive lineman from UCLA. You know, they see him a lot out there, so they're more familiar with him than most teams. So it'll be interesting what happens with that. I thought a little bit of a steal possibility that I like was Elijah Hood, running back out of North Carolina. He's actually, according to reports, was quote unquote turning heads at the rookie camp that was going on this week. So it'll be kind of interesting to see if he can develop, become the number two. And then maybe have that job to himself in 2018 when Money Lynch decides he doesn't want to play anymore. So I gave them a B as well.
I'm going to let the shot you took at Marshawn pass. I'm sure
I'm not taking a shot at Marshawn. I just think he's going to play. He wants to play 1 year in Oakland. We'll see what happens. I don't think. Do you think he plays 2 years?
No, probably not.
Okay, that's not a shot. It's just, listen, if it was a shot, I'd start bringing up the articles from 2008 and stuff he did in Buffalo. I'm not going to do that. Man. He's a classy individual. We love Money Lynch.
Yeah, to see what we're talking about, check out our Twitter timelines. We had a real good conversation about some of the let's say quirks of Marshawn Lynch. before we get derailed, though, we better get it to Neil to finish us out with the NFC West.
That's great, Justin. Hey, Rob, I do love the phrase "turning heads at minicamp." That's one of those classic.
It is a classic, but yep. You know, I mean, obviously he's doing good without the pads on. So I mean, we'll see what happens with the pads on. But the way their depth chart's set up, I mean, he's got a shot to become the number two. I think, in fairly short order.
We should have some sort of game, Justin, in a future podcast with Rob, where sort of like mini camp, classic mini camp sayings.
Mini camp bingo, brother.
Yep, every time somebody has a classic one like turning heads, then Rob has to have a drink of something.
Well, Rob's going to have a great deal of affection for all of those, like
football cliches. Oh, man.
Yep, fantastic. Anyway, turning heads in the NFC West, where, none of these teams, because I've graded them all quite low, sorry. Brace yourself, Justin. We'll start with the LA Rams. And the LA Rams, okay, they didn't have their first round pick because last year, of course, they decided to give it to somebody else. So Tennessee, wasn't it, for the pick of Jared Goff, who is a player who has come on leaps and bounds since last year, I can tell you, guys, which must be another mini camp classic saying for our bingo game. We've got Gerard Everett in the second round. Now, important, I mean, this pick's been trashed across the draft landscape, but I actually, their head coach is Sean McVay. McVay's been with Washington for a number of years now, and I can tell you one thing Sean McVay wants in his offense is a pass-catching tight end. We've all seen the Jordan Reeds and all the rest of it with Washington. That's whatever it is. And, yeah, they felt he was high enough up on their board. They took him. He will be, I mean, you guys into this fantasy football stuff, I'd be picking up Gerald Everett as a guy who's going to have a lot of catches and any of Goff's touchdown passes, high percentage, they're going to Everett. So get him grabbed, nab him up, Justin. They also took Cooper Kupp, who I think will be the Jameson Crowder of the Rams offense. And look for him to get lots of playing time there in Los Angeles. Okay, what I didn't like was the fact that they had given up the pick in the first round last year for Goff. And yeah, this was a deep draft. They could have done with one of those guys. They would have had the fifth pick this year. So you can see the sort of guys that they passed up on with that trading up for Goff. And in terms of guys to watch in the future, look out for sixth round. Fullback, control yourself, Rob. It's another fullback. Sam Rogers, who does it all, really. He's going to be a special teams guy. He can catch passes. He can even run the ball a little bit here and there. He can block. Not a huge fullback. Maybe he doesn't have that prototypical size, but he's a good player. Anyway, the Rams are getting a C from me for this draft. Mainly because they just didn't have the picks, and you know, when you have teams who, like the Patriots, you know, who don't have many picks in this draft, you look at what they did with those picks, not to have them. And this was for Goff, and I think the jury is still out, isn't it, on Goff after his first season. If Goff's going to make it, of course, he's got Sean McVay there, and if he doesn't make it with Sean McVay, he's not going to make it anywhere in this league. San Francisco up next. Everybody knows I'm not a fan of Solomon Thomas, and if I'd been in their position, I probably would have taken Jamal Adams first ahead of Solomon Thomas. But you've got to say, Solomon Thomas, everybody else seems to love him, so maybe I'm wrong. It has been known, listener. The impact, though, for me on Buckner and Armstead's playing time and that defensive front, I'm not sure. We'll see. Right, time will tell on Solomon Thomas. No doubt he's tearing up in camp, no doubt, even as we speak, Justin. They did, though, at the end of the first round, get Reuben Foster, inside linebacker. Again, another player in this draft who is highly talented, but highly flawed. We all know about his diluted tests and his possibly related argument with the medical person at the Combine. He's got off-field, other off-field stuff, and maybe doesn't get quite as high a profile, but he has had various injuries over his college career, and he is quite a lightweight linebacker, especially for the inside linebacker spot. So we'll see. He's certainly on the field. He looks a terrific player, but then Alabama's stuff with terrific players. The player to watch for San Francisco, I'm going to go fourth round running back from Utah, Joe Williams, who I think may be able to be a third down back there with the 49ers and could see quite a lot of playing time, a bit like the Chris Thompson that McVay had at Washington. I can run the ball a little bit, but also excellent out of the backfield and good in the passing game. I'm going to give San Francisco a B grade. Did I just say Sean McVay? I did, didn't I? I did, yeah. With San Francisco, of course, it's another ex-Washington offensive coordinator in Shanahan, so pretty much the same thing. Give them a B grade at San Francisco. The Seattle Seahawks, Justin, your boys, again, they took a player, well, they traded out, of course, the first round, but then they ended up with Malik McDowell, another player who has tremendous on-field ability when he decides he fancies doing it. Let's see if he can bring it on the field consistently for Seattle. I'm not sure. We'll see. I mean, he does look fantastic. Great size, great length. And maybe the Seattle coaches are used to dealing with more difficult players with maybe slight attitude problems. They've got a history of doing well with those guys. So let's see what they do with McDowell. He could be one of those typical boom and bust players, boom or bust players. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does in his first season there, Justin. However, the big problem for me with this Seattle draft was the fact that they really didn't hit on the offensive line early or often enough. And I was they ended up taking Pokic, the center. And Justin, I'm sorry, but this guy's 6 foot six. He's not playing center with your 4 foot nine quarterback behind him. No way. And like Chris and Rob said in one of our pre-draft episodes, the reason he's 6 foot six and playing a center is because he's 6 foot six and couldn't play tackle. So not sure where he's going to play, Justin. Maybe you'll have a bit of more insight into what's happened so far in the mini camp there. But I didn't like him very much at all. And hey, when you picked McDowell, wasn't Forrest Lamp still on the board?
Sure was.
Yeah, I would have taken him all day long. But look, one player to watch. I really liked in watching tape of North Carolina's defensive tackle Nazir Jones, third round pick for you guys. Quite liked him. I think he'll be a player who will come on in that defensive front for you guys. I give you also a C grade, Justin, and I would have given you a D grade. But since you're on the show, I brought it back to a C grade. And finally, in that division, the Arizona Cardinals, they took Hassan Reddick and Buda Baker with their first two picks. They traded up for Buda Baker, I believe, and I don't think that was the right thing to do. He's an okay player, Baker. A bit undersized, but maybe in their defensive secondary, they'll find a role for him. They're pretty good with doing that with those guys. So, yeah, give them bit of credit there for those two picks. Reddick is a terrific player, and he will certainly help out that defense front seven. But I've got to say, with the Cardinals, where was the quarterback? They've got Palmer sitting there, one hit away from extinction. And yeah, I just felt they had to get a quarterback in this draft, but no quarterback. So it's Palmer and Drew Stanton this year. I don't think that was a great move for them. One move I did like, though, round four, Pittsburgh guard Dorian Johnson, who has had medical issues, but I think he's a potential starter from day one for that offense, a guy to look out for. And overall, because of the lack of quarterback in that draft, I'm going to give them a C grade as well. So really, the NFC West Didn't do it for me, Justin.
You know, I'm actually, as a Seahawks fan, comfortable with a C grade. In my experience, the most boring drafts are usually the ones that pan out for the Seahawks, so I'll take it. I'm fine with that. All right, guys, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think one of the things I would say from this draft, Justin, was how many times have we been saying here tonight, super talented player, but some sort of off-field or medical issue seems to have come up quite often, and that's a bit of a concern. What does it say about college football? I don't know.
Yeah, I think today that was the second most common phrase to, I really like this nose tackle, except with a Scottish accent. What about you, Rob? Any final thoughts?
No, actually, I thought Neil kind of hit it on the head. This draft, amazing upside potential, but it might not be that good.
Yep.
So this could be something as good as what, like the 2011-2012 draft, or it could be the 2013 draft.
Oh, God, it can't be the 2013 draft. That was a special draft.
Yeah, I don't think it can be as phenomenally bad as that one. That was all time.
No, it won't be that bad, but it just might not be insanely good. Not as good as everyone thought, you know, 3 months ago.
Yeah. of course, my the Seahawks are trying to draft the entire top 10 of the 2013 draft, so...
I think, Justin, the reality of this draft is that you've got some players there who are absolutely all-pro talents with so many off-field problems. There's just the natural order of things is that a large number of those super talented players are going to bust out of this league, and it's going to look really bad because the guys are so talented. John Ross is a great example that Rob had at Cincinnati. That guy is as good as any receiver we've seen coming out of the league in terms of his ability as a wide receiver with that speed. But that guy could bust out easily. On a positive note.
Yep, definitely true. So on that depressing note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Guys, follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can find me at Corey. That's at KOREIS. Neil, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at NeilSalmon71.
All right, Rob, where can we find you?
You can find me at Buffalo_Sauced.
All right, you can also find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. We have a Titans fan. We still need a Lions fan. So if you or somebody you know loves to talk Lions, hit us up. Email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. And with that, we're going to turn it over to the new sounder now that Jeff Fisher has been fired. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.